You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
Hello and welcome into the 18th iteration of the Coast to Coast Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Austin Craycraft, and I'm joined as always by Dante Guarneri. How is your February going so far, Dante?
2 days in. I can't complain just yet, so things are going pretty well.
Seen any groundhogs yet? Or their shadows,
No,
excuse me.
And they're hard to come by between Broadway and Amsterdam.
Not surprising. But today we are thrilled to be joined by our second guest on the program. His name's Lior Kozai. He's one of our editors at LastWordOnProBasketball.com. How are you doing today, Lior?
I'm doing good. I'm happy to join you.
Yeah, we're thrilled to have you. You are a Raptors supporter as well as just a general NBA fan. So I think this show seems fitting to focus mostly on the Eastern Conference, as it may not be as exciting as the Western Conference, but I think it deserves just as much attention. And I think the perfect way to start that is the trade that happened just a few hours ago. Recording this at about 5:30 Eastern on Thursday, this trade involved the Milwaukee Bucks and the Charlotte Hornets swapping mediocre big men with Miles Plumlee going to the Hornets and Roy Hibbert and Spencer Hawes going to the Bucks. Let's just start it off right off the bat. What are your guys' initial reactions to this deal?
I was, just very, very all right with it. I think putting these guys as average players is maybe giving them some. If this trade was maybe 4 years ago, I could have been a little bit more excited if they were getting the Roy Hibbert of the Pacers and if and whenever Miles Plumlee was relevant. But now this to me is a trade that maybe Milwaukee's trying to go in a different direction. One being that they're trying to shore up that front court by getting a useful defensive stalwart in Hibbert. At the same time, they might be trying to move Greg Monroe, the guy that they've really used off the bench, and he's kind of been the guy in the second unit. But at any rate, it seems like they could add another guard or two, and I think this kind of frees them up to do that.
Yeah, I get it from Milwaukee's perspective, and just to unload Plumlee's contract, I mean, they signed him to a four-year, $52 million contract. He's averaging 3 points a game. But, like, just from Charlotte's perspective, I was kind of confused. I mean, people were saying Plumlee's young, but it feels that way. He's only in his fifth season, but he's 28. He's the same age as Hawes, which is like crazy to think about. So,
yeah, that's crazy.
I don't really get what Charlotte's doing. We'll have to see here.
The thing for me about the contract part of it is I feel like it's just mute because the Hornets have already basically dug themselves into their team that they have right now, so they kind of have to stick with it. So I don't think money's too much of an object in their case. But yeah, I agree with both of you that this is just, it's just kind of there. I don't think it changes anything in terms of the Eastern Conference playoff picture. And with that, I think it's fitting to get into some Raptors talk. Before we get into the current era of Masai Ujiri and Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan and even last night's tough loss to the Celtics, I think it's fun to reminisce on this team because at one point they did have two of the most dynamic, fun wing players in the league. And those two names are Vince Carter and Tracy McGrady. They're two that I grew up absolutely loving just because they kind of got me into the sport and they were two of the more fun players to watch in the league. What did they mean to you as a Raptors fan, and if you even remember that far back?
I mean, I'm a little young for it, but I mean, everyone in Toronto just loves those guys. We booed them for a long time. I mean, I'm not really a fan of booing unless the player is just not giving effort, but they were just Carter. It was a long time, but you saw in the 20th anniversary, they honored him, and the fans, they at first booed, but then they stood up and they gave him a standing ovation because he just meant so much to Canada basketball.
And I remember listening to a Zach Lowe podcast with two of the beat writers in that area.
Yeah.
And they talked about how Carter and the Raptors still have a rocky relationship, and how him getting into their Hall of Fame hasn't happened yet, I believe, or something to that extent.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what it is, but I remember them talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, the exit everyone remembers, he basically played bad on purpose, had some minor injuries that he sat out for a long time, and forced their hand in trading him. And, I mean, it took a long time to recover, but I think most fans, Carter's a free agent in the summer. I mean, if he wanted to play one more year and just for the marketing even, just sign with the Raptors, I think fans would love that. I think he would be welcome back with open arms, even though some people are still a little bitter.
Is he a better offensive player than Carroll or Ross right now?
I mean, Damari Carroll, he's just... Raptors fans are really reactionary, or kind of known for just being the irrational, reactionary fan base. So when someone has a bad game, I mean, people overreact. But Damari Carroll's had, like, a bad month or two right now.
Are we talking about Vince Carter right now?
No,
if he's better?
I'm talking about right now.
Yeah, Damari Carroll is a frustrating player to watch. Like, he cannot drive. Every time he drives, it's this herky-jerky, shaky kind of drive, and he just can't do it. And, I mean, they've been looking for a 3-and-D wing for a long time. They tried out Rudy Gay, that didn't work. And Carroll is just not the solution, especially on his contract. I mean, I don't think Vince would come in and start, but I think they could use a veteran like that off the bench. I don't know if his offense is better, but it's not bad.
Carroll's kind of the definition of a guy who took advantage of that free agent period and really got his money's worth over like 1.5 good seasons in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And especially in the playoffs where he actually was able to defend LeBron, which Toronto was kind of banking on.
I mean, he struggled with a lot of injuries last year, so that really... I don't think he's been the same since then. The same happened to Korver in the playoffs, actually. But he hasn't really been the same player. Ross, on the other end, he signed an $11 million a year extension, which is actually looking like a great bargain now. He's actually playing his most consistent season by far of his career. And even though Ross has been outstanding, I would rather see him in a trade, because right now... there was a great piece by Blake Murphy, one of the Raptors beat writers, that came out today. And he was basically saying, I mean, this team is a piece away, as they've always been. And right now they're struggling, and the best solution would be to make a trade. And Ross is just one of the most enticing pieces they have.
And for you, what is that ideal piece? What is the thing that they're missing most?
I mean, the glaring weakness is the front court. They just have no power forward depth. Patterson is there, but he's going to get paid this offseason a ton, especially as a stretch four in the modern NBA. And Sullinger is just... They're 0-7 with Sullinger in the lineup after last night. The one game they've won in the last 8 games, he sat out. So he's really struggled, and he's not in shape. And I think they just need a power forward upgrade. The rumors have pointed them in the offseason. They could have gotten Taj Gibson, but then Noah and Gasol both left, and they could have gotten Millsap. But once Horford, apparently they were lined up to get Millsap in a trade, but then Horford last second, he signed with the Celtics instead of re-signing.
Why? I've also heard the Millsap thing, that he was supposed to go to Denver
there were a couple.
They were gonna work on the Horford reports. Howard.
He was supposed to go to Brooklyn too, guys.
So Millsap was the guy Raptors fans wanted, and once that Korver trade to Cleveland came out, everyone thought the Hawks are just gonna tank, like they're done, and all the Raptors fans started to jump on Millsap. But then, of course, they kind of turned it around. Now the Hawks are only a game and a half back of the Raptors. So they're not really trying to tank now. So I don't think Millsap's on the table. But Ibaka is actually the guy who people are looking at now.
He's the flavor of the week now, yeah, for Raptors fans to be going after.
I mean, what do you guys think of that? Do you think Ibaka would fit that?
I like it. It's just whether how much they have to give up for him and whether he's willing to resign. And people have questions about his age just because of his background. Yeah. Like, how old is he really? And you could be scared of that. I know there's certain people with the site who are particularly perturbed by that.
I think it would be a great piece. Honestly, I think, considering that, you know, he's maybe some poor man's version of Millsap, and this team is trying to win now. So whatever his age may be, he could be 5 years older, but they need him now. So, and the way he's played right now in Orlando, just, it doesn't fit there. He needs to leave.
Yeah.
Is the price is it similar to what was being rumored with Millsap, or is it less?
I think it would be less just because, as you said, the age is a bit dicey, and, he's just not as good a player. I mean, Millsap, I'd argue, right, is a top 20 player in the league. Ibaka, though, he would give them a shot blocker next to Valanciunas, and Valanciunas isn't really that rim protector, so I think that would be a great fit. And on the other end, he's a stretch forward just like Patterson, except a better version.
Right, and you could, even as crunch time comes along in the playoffs and maybe Valanciunas isn't dominating against, say, Cleveland in the Eastern Conference Finals, you could play Ibaka at the five because he's capable of that, and he's taller than a guy like Millsap, so they could get more stretchy, as the kids like to say. But yeah, I think that's kind of the burning question is around the Raptors this entire season, is that power forward spot. And it's the Ross piece that people are talking about. It's Patterson, maybe. It's maybe a pick. What do you think the ultimate cost would be?
I mean, their best asset is Norman Powell, but he's kind of a folk hero. Raptors fan.
Yeah, I don't think he's going anywhere.
I don't think he's going anywhere either. He's actually been averaging about, I think it was 18 points a game since DeRozan went down. So I don't think he's going anywhere. I think they wouldn't even trade him for Ibaka, and he's on a great contract, his rookie contract. But I think it would involve Ross, definitely. Maybe Patterson, since he's a free agent too. But either way, it's tough to give a lot up because Ibaka is a free agent, and either he leaves or he re-signs for a lot of money, because we all know the cap is going up again this summer. It's going to be a tough situation, and Lowry's a free agent, and he might command about $200 million for 5 years, which could be a tough pill to swallow.
Well, with Powell's emergence, is it dumb to question whether it was worth it to give DeMar the money?
It is, or yes, am I it just being dumb.
Insane? Yeah, yes. I think DeRozan's just improves every year. I don't think it's really questionable. And you see in the last couple games with just in the Celtics game last night, I mean, they trapped Lowry on the pick and rolls, and then there was no second playmaker. I think they just need, if anything, they would need another playmaker. And I think Powell can kind of be that guy. He would be a great sixth man if Ross is dealt. He would be a great sixth man to fill in that role and to be that scoring punch off the bench.
So if it was Ross and Pat for Ibaka, do you think? I don't think either side says no, really. I don't see Orlando having any leverage in this type of deal. They're already so bad, right? But how can
They're 14th now in the East. They're down to 14th.
So
Oklahoma City trade is looking so bad at this point. It's remarkable.
Yeah.
And we all saw it coming, but it's been even worse than expected because Sabonis is starting for them. Oladipo is basically what they need right now.
Presti robbed them on that one. I mean, Orlando, we all knew this made no sense in the offseason. I kind of like when things just happen exactly like we expected. I mean, the Bulls are completely imploding. Who saw that coming? And the Magic, I mean, they signed Ibaka and Biyombo. It just didn't make sense from the beginning. And now, I think it was James, wrote a piece on our site actually about how the Magic January was just the downfall of their season. And I think at this point they're going to have to do a full out tank, even though they've been bad for a while. They've got to actually try to head to the bottom. And if they do, then dealing Ibaka would make sense.
How many of their pieces actually like excite anyone too at the point they're at? Aaron Gordon, I guess, he's still developing, but like we still have no idea what he's going to be. His Zonia's been a bust, which I'm very sad about, as his jersey still hangs in my closet. And I don't even know who else is exciting. Alfred Payton, I am extremely low on. The Magic are just a dumpster fire, as much as just about any team in the league at this point.
Yeah, they're like a worse version of the Nuggets in that they have so many of these assets, but no pieces that anyone really, really wants or is willing to give that much for. Jody Meeks makes a serviceable two guard off the bench, but am I really willing to give a pick or anything really for him? I don't think so.
Yeah, it's like a conditional second rounder and cash for him. So yeah, I understand where you're coming from, but let's get back to good basketball teams. And going back to that game last night, I know DeRozan wasn't playing and it was in Boston, so with those two things in mind, you still kind of have to think the Raptors are the favorite in the East, barring whatever movement is left. Maybe who knows with Danny Ainge what he might pull out of the Rabbits.
I mean,
whether he's able to
I mean, the favorite to lose to Cleveland in the conference finals. I'd still say they're my top pick. Looking at it objectively, I just think, Boston, they're probably just as talented. They're just, they still haven't proven themselves in the playoffs. I just think it's about the Raptors. They just need to be consistent. I mean, last night, they actually brought the effort. I was kind of surprised because just during this whole bad stretch, they've been 8-12 in the last 20, and it's just been effort. And you can see it when they have energy, they're easily the second best team in the East. But it's all about getting some support to their guards and getting those guys off the bench like a Powell, like a Corey Joseph, who are just going to bring in some energy. And they weren't getting that, but they got it last night. And at that point, it was just about not having DeRozan. They didn't have the playmaking to really win that game.
And it's crazy to think that after after the Cavs had such a bad January, no one thinks the Raptors are close to them. And even the Raptors having a pretty bad January, maybe a few people think the Celtics are slightly above them. So I think it just kind of shows that there's maybe three tiers just in the top three of the East. I think a ridiculously hot Isaiah Thomas in the playoffs, if somehow he stays at this level or he dips down and is back up in the playoffs, gives the Celtics a shot. But the way they're currently constructed, this team still doesn't have very much talent. Like that was the whole thing about how great Brad Stevens was like 2 years ago, was how he was getting this team into the playoffs with no talent. And what have they done? Isaiah Thomas has matured a bit and they added Al Horford. That doesn't make you a top two team in the East all of a sudden. Which is kind of what I fell for, because I did pick them to be second in the East before the season, because I just bought into it too much, because I buy into new things too much. But that's just how it goes.
Yeah, and I think to a certain extent you have to, on one side, credit Boston because Isaiah Thomas has been fantastic. You're absolutely right. But at the same time, I think both Cleveland and Toronto are just extremely tired. I think they need the All-Star break more than anyone. And an injury like the one DeRozan has almost kind of points to that they probably just need the rest right now. It's less about maybe that their team has X, Y, and Z faults as much as it is this team is experiencing a downfall from how hard they're playing their guys. And Sully's return clearly didn't help that out, at least so far.
Well, he's a guy who, as much as anyone, who needs like the preseason to get revved up for regular season. So injuries hurt him.
I mean, yeah. Sully needs the Lowry diet. Lowry, he used to be known for kind of his
right.
Is that is that because the food in Toronto Lowry isn't that good, or did Kyle Lowry just get in shape?
No, they have some of the best restaurants in the world. It's all about just there was that picture, the first time anyone saw Lowry since he got on that diet, and he was just in this insanely good shape. And then JJ Redick actually commented on the Instagram photo, like, is that Kyle Lowry? Because he got in amazing shape, and he did it even after his contract. I mean, most guys, you look at them and they're in a contract year, and then after that they have like this big regression because they're just not as motivated. But what I love about Lowry, I mean, he's just always playing 100%, and he really dedicated himself even after getting that money.
I guess.
Yeah, Lowry.
Go ahead, please.
Well, I was just going to say how I think, once again, I'm just going to bring it back up, that I think Lowry deserved to start the All-Star game.
I agree. I mean, Zach Lowe called him the best guard in the East, and I wholeheartedly agree with that. I mean, he's just, people don't realize, I mean, his numbers have been career best. They've been pretty good, 23 points, 7 assists, 5 rebounds. But just beyond that, he's arguably the team's best defender. It's probably between him and Patterson. I mean, they don't have many good defenders, but he's a really good defender. He hustles just so hard. I mean, I had a piece at the Cauldron about a month ago just about how he hustles, like, and it just changes games. And his net rating is insane because even when DeRozan's on the bench, the team is still good just with Lowry. And that Lowry with the bench lineup, Lowry, Joseph, Ross, Patterson, and Noguera has been outstanding. And it was like that last year with Biombo in Noguera's place. And it's just been a trend because they survive without DeRozan just because of Lowry and how good he is. But even when DeRozan plays with the starters, if Lowry's out, it's a whole nother story. He's just too important to them.
I think that this team is, it's going to end up being where it needs to be. I still have some questions as to whether Dwayne Casey's going to be able to put them into the spot where they need to be to even have a chance to beat Cleveland. And I know that's kind of been a running narrative for like 2 years again, but this, we know what we're going to get from the Raptors pretty much. And it's not very exciting, but Lowry's awesome. DeRozan is pretty awesome. And the rest of their pieces just kind of fill in where they need to get them to be second and or third in the East. But I think what I'm most curious about in the Eastern Conference past those three teams, because I think there's a pretty clear divide after them, is who we like fourth, because there are some interesting options to say the least.
I like
the Wizards have been go ahead.
I like Philly.
Yeah.
The process on the rise.
Okay. I'm just gonna act like you didn't say that.
You might as well take the Heat right now with Waiters Island leading the way.
Yeah, 9-game winning streak for Miami. How about that?
That's the worst thing that's happened in Miami in some time.
My personal view on this is that the Heat should just trade Dragic, let Waiters run the point, and just watch their season go down in flames. And get a top pick and pick one of those point guards, because I mean, this Waiters hot streak, we know it's not gonna last. I love it, it's hilarious, but that team, it just makes no sense the way it's currently constructed.
He's there on a 1 year, what, $6 million contract. So this is a whole entire stretch of him just trying to put on a show so he can get paid. And I'm kind of all right with it. I kind of like your idea here. Miami desperately does need first round picks back, and that they're competing for like the 10th spot in the East is cool for maybe 5 minutes, but then you have to realize they need to. I know that this isn't necessarily Pat Riley's way to do things, but building through one of the most loaded drafts in recent history makes too much sense for a team that doesn't really have much going for it.
Well, yeah, they actually have their pick this year, as opposed to it being sent to Phoenix for the Dragic trade. But yeah, they were, before this 9-game winning streak, they were 11-30. They were sitting right where they need to be. And the other thing about that, I wish Billy King was still in Brooklyn, because does anything make more sense in the entire world than Dion Waiters to Brooklyn after a hot streak?
Just let him run the show. Let him be. He told his college teammates to call him Kobe Wade. So
I think it would make more sense for Billy King to trade for Dragic and give up like the 2025 pick or something.
that's also very true.
But yeah, back to the fourth seed. I like Washington. I mean, from a Raptors perspective, that team just terrifies me. I think yep. just like they swept them 2 years ago, I think they could do the same. I've seen stuff about Markieff Morris is just playing at a really high level right now, and that kind of was the change in their season. They started, I forgot what it was, but they've been 26-12, I think, in their last 38 games. So it's been a few months now since they went on this kind of, not streak now at this point, but just this run. And I think they're better than Atlanta. I think they could at least challenge Boston and Toronto for sure.
Hey, Dante, I think it's time. Is it time for you to issue an apology to Scott Brooks? As you said, he might be the only bad coach in the NBA.
Yeah, no, I think there is some reasons for me to apologize, but I also think that it has a lot to do with John Wall and Bradley Beal being on the same page finally. I think maybe Wall is seeing some kind of light right now, and he realizes the potential within the East to really get to the finals. I do agree that this four seed belongs to Washington. I don't see Atlanta or Indiana jumping over them. Charlotte maybe has a shot if they get super hot, but that seems unlikely to me too. I think the difference from these Washington teams in the past, and this maybe again does not have anything to do with Scott Brooks as much as it does personnel decisions, having two bigs in Gortat and Nene start for 3 or 4 years straight isn't going to help you in the modern NBA. But Markieff Morris, like Lior said, has really made strides this year, and my fantasy team has loved it, and Washington has loved it, and I think that's really put them in a place to succeed at the four.
Well, and the thing about a Markieff Morris is he pretty much matches up well with everyone outside of Cleveland because he's super active. He's the guy who teams last year when he was playing well, Western teams were asking for him so that he could counteract Draymond. That's how highly teams thought of him. And then he had a very down stretch for most of last year after signing a ridiculous contract the summer before. And now he's picking that back up, and he can match up well with just about any of these power forwards. Millsap and him, pretty similar kind of guys. Obviously, Millsap's done it longer and can play 60 minutes in a basketball game. But I like Markieff a lot, and I like his activity. Gortat's solid, and Bradley Beal's actually been good. I wrote the preview before the season, and I was talking about how Bradley Beal hasn't even been good this season, the previous few seasons, and he's actually been putting it together, being more efficient, and I think those things, along with John Wall just playing back to his normal capabilities, have gotten the Wizards to the fourth seed. So I think, after talking out, I agree. I think Washington's the obvious four. Is it Atlanta? Is it Indiana? Wait, no one likes Chicago?
Just with Washington, I mean, do you know who leads the league in three-point percentage right now?
Automatic Porter.
Otto Porter. He's getting... I think he'll get a max this summer. I mean, not a mega max, but... a max for a young player. Yeah. I mean, they have to at this point.
I agree. I apologize for not mentioning that. That's unnecessary.
He gives DeRozan nightmares. I mean, not as much this year, but in the past, he's so lanky, and he's the perfect 3-and-D guy right now.
I think it'd be pretty funny to watch Wall's reaction to Otto Porter getting a max deal.
That's yeah, Wall's not going to be too happy, but he's playing incredible. I mean, can they extend him the same way OKC did for Westbrook and Houston for Harden?
I don't know the CBA that well. Yeah. I told you guys to read it before coming on the show. You obviously didn't.
He's as deserving as anyone. I mean, if Lowry's the best guard in the East, I think he's second, even above Thomas. He's a great defender to go with all of his offensive capabilities.
Well, he was part of that group who had the October 30th deadline this year. So I think he's really made the most of the contract year. He probably bet on himself. He probably maybe even had an extension, but he just didn't go for it. So I think that's going to end up working out in his favor for sure.
Yeah.
And then, but up fifth, I think, is where it really, really gets interesting, because the top four teams are teams that people actually kind of get excited about, and the rest is just like the Hawks, who are about to break it up but are now fifth in the East. You have a team like Indiana, who's just got a curmudgeon of just weird talented players that don't really fit together. Chicago's just there. Charlotte can play defense, but they're not supremely talented, and you're mostly just betting on Clifford. I wish Milwaukee was that good. Detroit's just bleh. But who do you guys like in that fifth spot, and maybe a dark horse?
I think it's probably going to be Atlanta. I think they have just enough talent to kind of push them there and kind of stay in a stable spot the rest of the way. Obviously, Budenholzer is a great coach. I do think that Indiana can contend, but a lot of these teams dug themselves a hole. A team like Charlotte, and whether they're in game or whether it's as a season as a whole, they tend to dig themselves into a spot where their offense can't carry them out of. And that's what we're kind of seeing right now. The team is you know, obviously they're making moves for a reason, and they do think that there is a little bit more to the season perhaps. But at the end of the day, there are probably four teams in Charlotte, Detroit, Milwaukee, New York that have kind of put themselves in a position where it's going to be hard to turn things around.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really see anyone passing Atlanta for that fifth seed. I think they all have kind of their own collection of talent, but I just don't see them beating Atlanta for that record. But in the playoffs, I think it's kind of a different story. Just I could see a few of those teams beating Toronto or Boston just because of how they match up. I don't think there's that wide a gap. I just think they're not really good regular season teams because they're still not quite on the same page. I mean, specifically, Indiana had a lot of chemistry issues bringing in all these new players. And I think Charlotte hit a rough stretch. They started well.
Yeah, you kind of just stole my next question was going to be, since we aren't excited about any of these teams, who do we think could possibly beat one of the top four seeds and make a little postseason run? Because as you said, Lior, these teams are kind of more built for the postseason because they grind it out. They value each possession maybe more than others, and I see that in Indiana. Even a team like Chicago, if they're not at each other's throats yet, I think could possibly do some damage because you have two extremely clutch players in Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade. And even a team like Charlotte, who I know Dante and I liked coming into the season, who are really stout defensively. And I just don't know if they can score enough points.
Yeah, I don't see anyone beating Cleveland regardless. I mean, that's just done. Like, Cleveland's in the final.
Yeah, that's ultimately the goal.
I think even if Love and Irving were injured, LeBron could just carry them. I mean, playoff LeBron's a different animal.
Does Melo going to Boston change that? Who? Does Carmelo Anthony?
Melo.
Oh, yeah. I think they would have a chance at that point. What do you think?
I don't think that solves the issues that they have. I think they're already, you know, this top-notch offensive team. I have a little concern and some reservations in adding someone to take over Isaiah Thomas's spot as the go-to offensive guy. Not that I even know that Melo is that guy, but I know that he'll demand that. I think that their trouble is front court defense. I think they need to find something to help them near the rim. And giving up a bunch of pieces for Melo is probably not going to do that. So I'm a little hesitant on that.
Yeah, the rebounding too. I mean, in that conference finals between the Hawks and the Cavs 2015, like, Tristan Thompson had more rebounds in one game than Horford had all series. Like, Horford can't be your rim protector or rebounder. They were really struggling in rebounds early in the season. They were last in the league. I think they're still near the bottom. And that's definitely a problem. Carmelo's not solving that. I think it would give them a small chance, but I think Cleveland would still need to have a major injury in order for Boston to beat them.
Well, why aren't we talking about maybe Serge Ibaka to Boston? Because I guess he's not a supreme rebounder, which wouldn't solve too many issues. But he can protect the rim, and he's another tool in Brad Stevens' toolbox offensively. Other names as I'm just we've heard the Nerlens Noel deal spouted about by Bill Simmons in probably 20 tweets by now. Who else who could rebound well? Amir Johnson isn't a horrible rebounder. He just doesn't give you anything else, really.
Yeah, I just don't think it moves the needle. I mean, Cleveland, they have no answer for just Cleveland. When Cleveland puts LeBron with 4 3-point shooters around him, they just have no chance against that. Like, Jay Crowder's...
Well, no one in the East does.
No one in the East does. Yeah, that's my point. I just think the lower East teams... From two through eight, it's not that big a difference. It's really just Cleveland is in a different tier, even as bad as they're playing, because they had their struggles last year, not as much as this, but they had their struggles, and then they still ended up winning the conference and the championship. So I think they'll get over it. I think they'll sign Chalmers or Pharma or whoever. And I think they'll figure it out. I think it's really the other teams are the more interesting parts of the East playoff picture.
And we saw last night the playmaking, as LeBron's concerns were for Kyrie Irving having his highest career assist total. And I thought that kind of showed things. Maybe LeBron's message wasn't directed at the owners and the GM and their front office, but just as much on their own roster, because they do have some capable players who are capable of making plays, and I think Kyrie kind of showed that. But I think ultimately, as you said, I think they do add some sort of backup veteran point guard who won't necessarily win them the finals, but I think he saves LeBron's legs from having the highest minutes in the league and the highest usage rate, which isn't healthy for him.
Lot of bad things to watch a Cleveland team with Mario Chalmers on it go against a Chicago Bulls team with Rondo and Dwayne Wade on it. That would make me so happy.
I mean, I'm just hoping the Bulls don't match up with the Raptors. Like, that matchup has just given them nightmares.
What is the ideal matchup for the Raptors? We've talked so much about the Raptors.
That's what I was about to ask.
Yeah, we should talk about that. I mean, honestly, there's no ideal matchup for the Raptors. They won 2 Game 7s last year, so they're proven in the playoffs, but they're still very shaky. No, I don't think any Raptors fans really trust that the conference finals or even the second round is a lock. I mean, the Bulls, they beat the 96 Bulls 20 years ago, and it's haunted them ever since. They've lost 10 straight to the Bulls. They struggled with the Pacers last year because Paul George just gave DeMar fits. They lost to the Hawks earlier this year because they just couldn't defend Dwight Howard, and he dominated Valanciunas. We know how they struggled with the Wizards and in the last couple of years. So, I mean, there's really no good matchup there. Maybe Charlotte, but
so,
that's kind of a long
shot. So with this kind of line of thinking, right, where you can play teams that are guard heavy, and then in a way it almost neutralizes your two greatest assets. Or if you play teams that are better in the front court, they just totally run over you guys. Dwight Howard or Andre Drummond by some chance, or even the wings like Paul George and Jimmy Butler. So like, if that is the case, is building around a duo of guards a good choice for developing a franchise, a successful one?
Yeah, I mean, I think they need that third piece. They need that one front court piece. Yeah. I think they're definitely capable of beating these teams. It's just about are the stars going to show up in the playoffs? And obviously, I think Lowry was hurt last year with the elbow. There were a lot of pictures of him just having a lot of swelling. He was shooting badly. And then the year before, Lowry was very hurt, and they just got killed by Washington. But I don't think it's the offense, really. Even as much as they've struggled in the playoffs, I think it's the defense, because a lot of this 2017 team reminisces of the 2015 team, and that team just couldn't defend. That's their main issue. It was the same thing. It's been the same thing this last month.
Well, what's different between this year's team and last year's team that you think is the difference defensively?
So they had Biyombo last year. I think that was a big factor, just his energy, his rebounding off the bench. That was crucial. And just Carroll has struggled. He wasn't in the lineup last year, and they kind of had these hybrid lineups that worked. And I think it's just been kind of inconsistency. They just haven't gotten, a starting lineup set. They still don't know, are they starting Patterson? Are they starting Sullinger? It's been kind of fluid, and it's still been a struggle, especially in the front court. And that Biyombo's absence is really felt.
Yeah, this is, the more we talk about the Raptors, the more I'm not feeling very good about them as a postseason team.
It might
team.
Just be because Raptors fans are really self-deprecating, but I've never watched a game with my dad where he didn't doubt that we're going to lose a 20-point lead. But that might go back to the Bargnani days. But this team, I mean, it may not be as bad as I make it sound, but they definitely have a lot of matchup issues, especially if you can just stop their playmakers. Like you said, it might be a problem to build around guards, just because who else do they go to when those guys struggle?
Yeah, I think we've just talked so much about their negatives, and they don't have a whole lot of like obvious strengths. Like, they don't have one strength that they can just go on. They're not better in any team at the East at any one thing.
Except
that makes sense. So,
yeah.
Yeah, but even then, there's most of these teams have pretty good point guards who aren't too far behind Lowry.
If Thomas is playing at this level, I mean, he's been better than Lowry the last few weeks. He's just been on fire. If he's at that level, he'll outplay Lowry, and even though maybe not on the defensive side. And then Irving can match Lowry, definitely. He can get to that level. We saw it in the finals. So it's really, and the same with Wall. So it's up to DeMar, and DeRozan has been excellent this season. You've got to credit him for his improvement. It's just, we have to see if he can actually keep that up in the playoffs against when teams can really lock in with the scouting report. And then you've also got to go against Paul George, Otto Porter, Jimmy Butler, all of these long wing defenders.
Well, I think it'll certainly be an interesting playoff stretch. I don't have too much more to say on the Raptors. I think I got all my Raptors thoughts out of my brain and into the microphone. So I think this was good. I think we talked about a team that Raptors fans will always say is not talked about enough, no matter how much they're talked about. So I think this was good. Lior, we appreciate joining the show. What's your Twitter handle if you want to plug it? And any
at Lior_KZ. And I covered the trade of mediocre big men today, so you can check that out. And thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, of course. It was a blast having you. Dante, we will reconvene sometimes in the next week. I know we have a lot of trade machine brewing in our brain, and we're going to have to get that out soon. So we appreciate everyone listening, and we will talk to you guys later.